And after a moment of silence for the addict who still suffers and the addict who will die today, followed by the weavers and the surgeon pair who are living to our table. God, grant us the serenity to accept the things we cannot change, the courage to change the things we can, and the wisdom to know the difference. I will let Jessica take it away.
My name's Jessica K. I'm a Okay, let's try that again. My name is Jessica K. I'm a recovered addict alcoholic. I just want to say a big thank you to Larissa and everybody who is part of putting this convention on. I had an amazing weekend so far. It's my first time in Winnipeg, so yeah. I feel honored and like humbled to be asked to even do this kind of thing. The fact that people want to hear what I have to say and want to hear my story, it makes my heart glad. I love the program of CA. I love this fellowship. It saved my life. I would absolutely be dead if someone didn't take my phone number show me this way of life. So. My sobriety date is May 2nd, 2010. I took 15 years this year. And if you ask anybody that knew me back then, they would say that's an absolute miracle. But that's what we do in this fellowship. That's our currency. We run in miracles here. And I got to meet many miracles this weekend. And I saw some miracles in the making tonight, which is incredible. People in early sobriety, as we were doing that countdown, I almost wanted to start crying. I was thinking, like, I remember what it's like, in that first year, those first weeks. And just thinking, like, how in the heck did these people manage to get long-term sobriety? Like, is there some sort of Kool-Aid that comes next, or... Anyways, I'm blessed to be able to still be here, still be carrying the message, and be, wanting, I always tell people, I talked about this morning, we want you to stay in CA. Come, get well, and stay. We want you to stay. So, what it was like? So I always tell people that, like, I thought that I was an alien, that I had come from another planet, and I was put here by accident. My parents weren't really my parents, and that I was different from everybody else, and I was, like, some sort of, alien person, and it was, like, a secret mission that I was sent to Earth on. I didn't really know about it, that they fried my brain so that I wouldn't know that I was an alien, and somehow I ended up here. Because I didn't feel like I belonged here at all. I was like, man, I am not of this planet. Like, everybody else seems to know exactly what the heck's going on. They've got this manual that I don't have. Like, they all have to, they know what they want to do. They know what their personality is. They know what they want to be. Like, they have likes and interests. And I was just morphing into who everybody, else was. Like, if you were into this and I wanted to be your friend, well, I'm into that too. Like, I just had no identity. Like, I would cling on to just about anything. It wasn't that I wasn't a popular kid or, like, that I was an outcast of any sort. Like, I always had friends. I was always in, like, the popular group of people. But I just felt this disconnection from such an early age, when it was offered to me, I took my first drink. I grew up in rural Newfoundland, and there's a lot of alcohol there, and so I just remember thinking, like, this is the best fucking thing that has ever happened to me. Like, I am locked in. Like, I drank and I was like, yes! Like, I finally feel like I am part of this world. Like, I'm not an alien anymore. I am with it. I am so cool. I have so many jokes. I am so, like, funny and amazing. I'm definitely gonna get a boyfriend now. Like, oh my gosh, like, I am living the best life. And I remember we went on our four-wheelers, and like, I flipped off the back of this guy, this like 20-something-year-old guy. Okay, I'm 13. This is really weird. We're in rural Newfoundland. Anyway, and like, we're all going, and I'm like, I flipped off the back of the quad. I burnt my arm on the exhaust, like, and I was just so hammered that the pain made me pass out. And then when I woke up, I just kept drinking. I was like, this, I don't even care. Like, this is the best thing that has ever happened to me. And I'm going to do this for the rest of my life. This is my solution to everything that ails me. And so obviously, you know, like, I just wanted to be a party girl. Like, it was so easy for me to just fall into that lifestyle. You know, being in a small town, I could easily hang out with people who were much older than me, especially with guys. And, you know, that obviously got me in some precarious situations. You know, I would wake up and, like, you know, I'd be blacked out and I would, like, come to and, like, there's a guy inside of me. Like, and, you know, at the time, I'm just like, oh, yeah, like, whatever. I guess that's just part of this deal. Like, I'm, you know, drunk with all these people and, you know, and I just remember thinking, like, that's just part of the deal. If I'm, you know, as long as I'm drunk, you know, I don't care. Anyway, so. And, you know, once I moved, like, after 9/11, we moved to Nova Scotia. And I was like, okay, well, now I have a new school that I'm going to. Like, I have to make a new set of friends. Like, I have to fit in again. So I immediately got attracted to a crowd of people, you know, the misfits of the crew, and they were all doing drugs, and I was like, okay, like, I'm into this, and I just always had it in my mind now that I could be a rock star. So I was like, I played my guitar, and I just really believed that if I, like, you know, emitted this lifestyle, like, if I could do drugs and rock and roll, like, that was what I was, like, that's what I wanted to do. And so, you know, I started adding in drugs and, you know, just everything that I could get my hands on. You know, I'm only in junior high at this point. And so I'm trying to get as much as I can. You know, my dad is raising me by himself. My mom had died of cancer when I was 9 years old. And so, you know, he's doing the best he can, but he's, like, you know, working late shifts, double shifts. He's, you know, he's a nurse, and so he's, like, working on an oil rig. He's, like, you know, leaving me by myself, you know what I mean? I'm, like, 14 or 15 at this point. He's like, whatever, like, you can take care of yourself and your sister. I'm having house parties. Like, we are shutting down the neighborhood. The cops are coming. Like, you know, at the time, I'm, like, having the freaking time of my life. Like, my house is the party house. I was just so happy with the way that my life was going. I was getting in a little bit of trouble. I stole my dad's car one night and crashed it and got arrested, and I was drunk, and, you know, and I finally told him that night. I was like, yeah, Dad, like, I think I have a problem with, like, alcohol and drugs. But I was only telling him that because I didn't want him to be mad that I crashed his car. So I was like, I'm playing the victim card. I'm like, oh, Dad, you know, I think I have a problem, you know? And he's like, oh my God, like, he's a nurse, right? So he's immediately, like, thinking in his medical mind, like, okay, like, we have to get you help, you know? And he sends me to this, like, adolescent treatment, like, meetings and stuff. And, like, I am out there, and I'm like, we're getting high before the meeting. Like, I'm meeting these people, and we're just like, no, like, we don't want to be sober. Like, this is the time of our lives. Like, we're not, nobody is giving this up. But eventually it got so bad, you know, that I'm, like, hammered in school. The teachers are, like, calling my dad and, like, you've got to do something about her. Like, she showed up to her grade 10 exams, absolutely hammered. And fucking, I aced those exams, by the way. But yeah, and they were like, you need to get her into sort of treatment center. So they set me up to go into this, like, adolescent treatment program. And I went for 4 months. So I got 4 months of, like, mostly sobriety. I think we were, like, snorting something in there at one point. I couldn't tell you what it was. They crushed it up. I put it up my nose. I didn't care. I was like, whatever it is. So I got, like, you know, mostly 4 months sobriety. And they, like, took us to some, like, meetings, I guess. I don't, like, I was only, like, looking at the guys there, right? So, you know, I got out, but I immediately went back to what I knew best. Like, I need drugs. Like, I can't function. Everyone told me, oh, if you get sober, your life will be so good. Like, you'll do good in school, and you'll have a good life, and your dad will be so happy and whatever. But, like, every time I got sober, like, I couldn't live with myself. Like, I felt like an alien again. Like, I felt uncomfortable in my skin. I was angry. You know, all of a sudden, I was really upset, you know. You know, I felt the grief of, like, losing my mom at a young age, and I just was like, you know what, I don't want to feel that stuff. And I don't have to. Like, I can regulate my own emotions by supplementing my body with drugs and alcohol. And I was cute, so it was really easy for me to get access. You know, all I had to do was find some guys that were a little bit older, and, you know, that was my in. And so I did that until the end of high school, and then I can't really remember a whole lot from 19 to 23. Like, I started smoking crack, you know, it kind of just went downhill. You know, I tried to just drink for a while, you know, and I remember this camping trip that my girlfriend and I went on. Like, we're just gonna drink, we said, right? And, you know, I remember, like, I had this huge bottle of liquor in my bag, and it started leaking in the bag, right? And so by the time we got there, I'm like, fuck, like, half of it is leaked into my blanket. She's like, oh, well. But meanwhile, I'm fucking wringing out this blanket. Like, I am gonna get that alcohol out. And it's got, like, mold in it from the, like, shitty blanket we brought. And, like, I'm like, oh, my God. Like, I'm, like, sucking on it. Like, oh, my God. But there's absolutely no way I was gonna let that go to waste, you know? You know, and so I find myself in, like, more precarious situations. I'm getting run-ins with the law. You know, my dad has just, like, given up on me completely. My sister's like, what the fuck are you doing? Like, and so, you know, I've moved out at this point. My dad is remarried to this girl, and she's like, yeah, we, like, just, like, let's live our lives, and she can just go do whatever she wants. She's a lost cause, right? And so, like, I'm just living wherever, you know, I get some boyfriends and whatever. I try to keep jobs, but I can't keep a job. You know, I tried to go work at a daycare, I drove into the front of it one morning, and, like, when I was going to open the daycare, and yeah, like, I'm gonna get fired for that, right? And, you know, and I, like, one time I overdosed at a job, and, you know, it just... Yeah, and so, yeah, so I couldn't snort any more cocaine, okay? So, like, my nose just wasn't working. Like, everything had just kind of, like, I feel like it just disintegrated inside. And so I was like, well, I'll just only smoke crack now. Like, that's the logical next step, like, obviously, right? And because as soon as I started doing cocaine, I was like, this is the fucking best. Like, I'm gonna do this until I die. And, you know, I kind of had given myself... You know, I'm, like, probably, like, 21 or something at this point, and I just resigned my life to say, if I live till 26, this will be good enough for, like, my dad, and, like, I'll have had a good enough life, you know, and he won't be as sad when I die if I make it to 26. Like, that's good enough, right? And I'm like, but if I die, I'm kind of doing him a favor. Like, this is a lot. Like, I'm a big hassle, you know? Like, he's worried about me all the time, but... And so, like... I just kind of disappeared from anybody that was trying to help me or do anything for me. I got a bunch of pills from my doctor because I would go in, like, I'd read, like, the DSM-5 and, like, make sure I had some, like, symptoms of some diseases that had good meds. And I'd go in there and, like, present them. Like, I'm having this, and I'm having all these things. And be like, oh, my gosh, you definitely are I'm bipolar and schizophrenic. I'm like, yes, I am. So I was, you know, I'm taking these meds that I don't even really need, and, you know, I'm doing as much drugs as I can. I'm in and out of these, like, mental hospitals, because I keep having these, like, psychotic breaks. I have this, you know, this guy that I'm, you know, engaged to. Like, how can you be engaged to a cocaine dealer? But I was, and I'm like, we're going to live the good life. I would say that. It'd be like, no, like, I'm going to quit. I'm not going to do this anymore. And we're going to, like, live the good life. And I would go to this restaurant. We'd be, like, you know, 4 days into a bender. I've literally just cut all his, like, eyebrows and his hair because I'm hallucinating. And, my, like, and I'm like, he's passed out. And I'm like, I'm going to make it look better. And I've, like, totally fucked his face. Like, he has to wear a hat, like, down over his face. Like, I've removed his eyebrows practically, totally. And his hair is just an absolute disaster. But at the time, while I was doing it, I was like, I'm an esthetician. Like, I'm a hair, I'm a barber. Like, you are going to look fabulous. But then, like, by the time 6 a.m. rolled around, I'm like, oh, my God, this is terrible. Like, and so I'm like, well, we need to go to this restaurant. And there was this restaurant down the road called the Esquire Restaurant. I'm like, we're going to go there, and we're going to live the good life. We're going to start, and we're going to eat. Can you fucking imagine? I'm sitting there trying to eat, and I'm like, oh, my God. I haven't eaten for 6 days, and I'm, like, looking at these eggs, and they look like death, and I'm like, I don't think I can live the good life. Can we just go get high? And so I would just give up so easily, you know, and that relationship obviously fizzled out. I think I got another drug dealer, and, like, I had to give him my car, you know, and at this point, like, the people can hear me. Smoking crack, so I can't smoke crack anymore because they can hear the lighter or they can hear the torch, you know. And so, like, who are the people? I don't fucking know who the people are, but they know now that I'm smoking crack, so I can't smoke crack. I've got to shoot it, right? So, you know, because that's silent. It's silent. I'm going to silently do that. I don't know. This is the stuff that I came up with, okay? And so, like, I am 90 pounds. I'm, like, dying. You know, I'm in these places that, like, I should never have ever gotten to, you know, like, I have this picture of me and my dad, you know, when I was younger, and I just, he looked so proud of me, eh? Like, I had done something in the picture, I don't even know what it was, and he just looked like, man, like, everyone used to say I was his favorite, you know, and, you know, like, he can't even look at me. Like, I show up or, like, try to do something and, like, all right, call. And he can't even talk to me. He can't even look at me. Like, I'm just such a sad state of affairs. You know, and he's a nurse, right? So, like, I show up at his hospital all the frickin' time, you know? And so the people, you know, he's, like, on a floor above, and they'll be like, yeah, your daughter's here, you know? And, like, in the end, he just wouldn't even come down anymore. And so, you know, I just want to die. I'm, you know, I don't even use clean needles anymore. Like, they're all rusty. Like, I don't care. I'm just waiting for the end. Like, I'm just hoping that I'll get sick enough that I'll die. And I can just be free because, you know, I'd already tried everything. You know, I tried. Well, I'm going to get a new boyfriend. I'm going to move. I'm going to go to church. I'm going to do this. I'm going to, you know, read fucking Dr. Phil books. You know, I'm going to try to eat healthy, you know, drink more Gatorade. I don't know. Like, I had just pretty much given up. Like, I had no hope at all. Zero hope that I could live sober. It was a very dark place. And so, you know, I'm like pissing in a Tupperware container in the closet just so that the people don't hear me flush the toilet. And, like, because that's the kind of shit I was up to. I like to just be in my closet and in this little crack house that we were in. And this guy was like, I think you're really sick. And I'm like, no shit. He's like, I think I should bring you to detox. And I'm like, you know, throwing up green stuff. Probably have, like, some sort of, you know, drug-induced illness. And I feel like my brain is just coming apart. And he's like, well, I'll bring drugs with us. And I'll just drop you off the detox. And then, like, they'll fix you up. So it's, like, Saturday. They don't do intakes on a Saturday at the detox, but I'm a, you know, frequent flyer, and, you know, they know me. And so they take one look at me and they're like, oh, like you need to go across the street. Like, and across the street is the Emerge. Because like my arms are an absolute disaster. I'm like, everything's infected. And so apparently I was septic. So that was probably great that I ended up at the hospital. And so I don't really know what happened that week. I say my sobriety date's May 2nd. I kind of just picked that because it was a few days, I think, after I arrived. So that's how I came up with that day. I get my detox Reebok and I'm in my little room after they've, you know, recovered me from the septicemia, and you know, they say that they're gonna have a meeting, right? And I think that, whatever, I've got a few days at this point. I'm pumped full of Valium and antibiotics, and, you know, they're like, we're gonna do a meeting, and it's like a co-ed kind of thing. Like, we have girls on one side, guys on the other side. So I fucking get my black eyeliner. I'm going down to the meeting. I'm gonna get a boyfriend, you know? Nino, the drug dealer, got my car, so like I don't have anything when I get out. I owe too many people, so obviously I need to get a new boyfriend and get a new hookup and just, you know, live the good life again. But two people come into this meeting, you know, sober people, not the people that I'm performing for. They're just putting on the meeting or whatever, and I'm not really paying attention to them. They're young people, and I'm like trying to get myself presentable to these people. But meanwhile, like, my nickname is Skeletor. I'm maybe 95 pounds, which is 40 pounds lighter than I am right now, okay? And so I'm literally wasting away to nothing. You know, my cheeks are all sunk in. Like, I'm infected. All my, you know, sides are infected. And I think that I'm gonna appeal to someone in this detox, for sure. But at the end of it, the two guys that are putting on the meeting, they're like, does anybody have any questions or whatever? And I'm like, well, I'm ready to stump you guys. Okay, I'm gonna say something so profound. I'm like, I fucking hate myself. What do you do about that? You know, and I'm like, this is it, they can't answer that question. And they're like, well, you know, I'm sure they told me that, like, we have a program of recovery and there's steps and blah, blah. I wasn't listening, like, I just wanted attention. And so afterwards, you know, they're like, hey, like, we want to take your number. And I'm like, I don't have a phone, man. Like, I'm a drug addict. Like, I don't even have a place to live after this. Like, and so my parents, like my dad and my two had remarried my stepmom, they flew back to Newfoundland and they had like bought a house and whatever. Like, I'm just doing my thing. They're just trying to start over without me. But I called them and they said, well, we'll get you a plane ticket this one time. And so I'm gonna go to my parents' house. And so I give them my like landline phone number in Newfoundland where I'm gonna go with my dad. And I'm like, they're never gonna call, right? They did. I'm there for about a week. I'm upstairs, like, my stepmom has been like, I can't sleep, I can't do anything. Like, she's been up there like rubbing my head so that I don't, you know, jump out my fucking window because I'm going absolutely crazy because, you know, I haven't been sober since I was 16 in treatment, like, the last time. Because even in detox, I would just load me up on anything that you can give me. Just load me up. You know, this is the first time I've literally been, like, purely sober, like, without any pharmaceuticals. And, like, I am going crazy. Like, I'm like, how am I ever going to make it? Like, there's no way that I can stay sober. Like, my brain, and this is what I used to tell people, like, if you were in my brain, you would know. Like, you would say, oh, like, if there was a television that showed my brain and you could see it, like, you could watch it, you'd be like, damn, Jessica, you need to do drugs. Like, we understand. I would never be able to live with what's going on in your mind. Like, I just wanted people to get me like that. Like, don't you understand? Like, I'm not doing this to hurt people. I'm not doing this because I feel like I want to. I haven't been partying for a really long time. I'm doing this because I have no other option. Like, I can't live without this. Like, if I don't have any substances in my body, I just can't. And so, like, I'm on day 7, and the phone's ringing downstairs, like, freaking landline. And my stepmom goes and answers it, and she's like, it's recovery people. And I'm like, recovery? She's like, yeah, they're from AA. It's like, what do they want? And so I go talk, and he's like, yeah, I'm sending it. There's people coming to pick you up for a meeting tonight. I'm like, what? Like, I am in rural Newfoundland, and I was telling this story this morning. Like, I'm an hour away from this meeting. So these people are going to drive an hour to come pick me up. Okay, so leave their house an hour away, come pick me up, drive me to the meeting. So that's 2 hours. We're going to be at the meeting for an hour. Then they're going to drive me back home and then go all the way back to their house. This is a 5-hour ordeal. These people don't know me, but someone in Nova Scotia called somebody in Newfoundland and said, there's this crazy chick, we call her Skeletor. She may or may not work to get sober, but she is so messed up that, like, if you guys don't go help her, she's probably going to die. Like, she's probably going to kill herself. And so I guess, you know, they thought that that was a worthy cause. And they came to get me. They all piled in their little van, like a bunch of people, like, you know, all these guys from this meeting. And they're all excited. Like, I'm the, like, first fresh person they've had in, like, 7 freaking years. And so they bring me to the meeting, and I'm like, this is so crazy. But, like, I fit right in. All of a sudden, I'm in a room with my people. Like, I never, like, when I was in the detox, I would go to the meeting, but I didn't actually listen. Like, I didn't actually listen to anything they said. I couldn't, right? But at this point, like, I'm actually listening, and I'm like, oh my, you guys are as hooked as me. Like, this is amazing. Like, I feel like I've found my people. And they're like, yeah, like, you don't ever have to get high again. I'm like, I don't. And they were calling me the child of the silver spoon. That was my nickname. They didn't like Skeletor. That was my new nickname. Because it was, like, they were all alcoholics, right? And they're like, oh, you do drugs. And I'm like, yeah, I do. Anyway, so I stayed there for 2 months. I'm on the phone with these two guys, okay, that gave me their number in the detox. Like, that, they took my number and they gave me theirs too. So it's Patrick and Alex, okay, these are the two guys. And so I tell them I'm coming back to Nova Scotia. My parents are gonna move back and we're gonna try this sober thing. Like, I got 2 months, I just got my 2-month chip. I'm on the boat, I'm coming back to Nova Scotia, and they're like, awesome, like, we're gonna go to a meeting as soon as you get there. But I'm like, oh, you know, like, no, it's okay, like, you don't need to. And they're like, no, like, this is not an option, like, this is what you have to do. And so this was my life in early sobriety. They're like, we're going here, like, you, this is not a choice, we're gonna come get you and we're gonna go. And I was like, oh, okay, like, I guess that's what I'm doing. And they're like, you need to get a sponsor. Okay, I'm gonna get a sponsor. There wasn't many women at the time, okay? I'm in Halifax now. There was women, I just wasn't finding them. For whatever reason, it just wasn't lining up. And so the two of them, they decided now, because they don't have anybody to send women to, that they're gonna tag team me, not in the way you think. And they're gonna take me through the steps, but they're gonna do it together so that people don't look at it weird, right? Because we're all the same age. I would definitely probably at that time would have banged both of them. Not because I was attracted to them, but because, like, that's what I did. And so, you know, I'm not sucking dick for recovery, you know what I mean? They're actually gonna give it to me for free. And so they're showing me the steps, and I'm like, this is what you guys are doing? This sounds kind of culty. Like, I've got to believe in God. And like, well, do you want to die or do you want to live? And I'm like, I guess at this point, like, I want to live. I was like, well, this is what you have to do. Like, and I go through and they're like, and I start to realize, I'm like, oh, I really am doomed. Like, this is a desperate predicament. Like, I looked at my life and I was like, I'm a real addict. Like, I can't control how much I'm going to take any time I use. And I literally can't stay stopped in my own power. Like, it was very abundantly clear to me how powerless I was. I looked at that little chunk of my life, you know, that I was, you know, especially from 16 to 23. Like, I absolutely obliterated my life. I was the tornado in everybody's life around me. Like, I completely physically, emotionally, mentally, and spiritually destroyed my body in that short amount of time. Like, I knew I was effed. And they were like, well, you gotta do this. And I was like, okay, well, I guess if it works for you, I will do it. And so I did the steps. This is in the summer of 2010. You know, eventually after I did the steps and I started sponsoring, like probably around like 6 or 8 months, I found a woman sponsor, finally. So I had a woman that I was doing some work with. You know, Patrick, he's like got 18 months at this point. Like him and Alex, they're like on fire. Like they're big book thumping, like they're so excited. They want us to do like Mickey Paul, which is like a young people's conference for like the Maritime. So like I'm on that committee, like I've got all of those sponsees, like we are killing it, right? So Patrick and I started dating, you know, it's very frowned upon. People are very upset. They're like, you guys are gonna ruin your sobriety. And I'm like, yeah, maybe, I don't know, like, but I like this guy. And so Alex, this woman sponsor moves away somewhere, and so Alex is like, well, I'm gonna be your sponsor, because at least you have something until you find somebody else. Anyways, he's still my sponsor 15 years later, but. And so we're doing all this young people stuff, like, we go to Tim Hortons every Friday night after our home group. Like, I'm opening up the meetings. Like, I'm a part of, like, I can't believe that this is what was an option this whole time. Like, I didn't realize that I could have done this whole time. Obviously, if someone had told me that in a year or two or whatever before, I wouldn't have listened anyways. I think just God lines things up when they're supposed to be lined up, and then I ended up in that detox on the day that I was supposed to, even though I wasn't supposed to get in, blah, blah, blah. I think it all just kind of happened exactly the way it was supposed to. So anyways, we're like Friday nights, we go out after our meeting and we do this thing called mirth, okay? Because one time we were talking about, like, you know, peeing in Tupperware containers and doing all kinds of weird shit, and the Tim Hortons, like, just really loud and obnoxiously because we're young people in sobriety, right? And this guy comes over to us, a normie, and he's like, your mirth is disturbing me. And we're all like, what the fuck? What is mirth? Anyways, apparently it means merriment or like joy. He's like, your joy is disturbing me. So from then on, every Friday night, we called what we did mirth. You guys going to mirth tonight? Like, we're all going to mirth. So that lived on for a while. Okay, so I'm super into the young people thing. Like, we've got a group of like 20 of us, okay, from like all the nearby neighboring smaller towns. We're doing all kinds of things together. We're driving to go to like little, you know, AA days or whatever. And like, we go to Toronto because we want to go to a meeting there. And we're like meeting people up there. And Patrick's like, we need to go to a CA meeting. And I'm like, what's a CA meeting? He's like, it's Cocaine Anonymous. I was like, there was a, like an AA specifically for us? He's like, yeah. So we went. I don't know if you guys know Cameron, but we went to this guy named Cameron F's meeting, okay? And like, he was so abrasive and amazing. And I was just like, oh. And he's like, yeah. I just couldn't believe it. I was like, I thought AA was amazing, which it is. But I was like, CA. My people. I'm like, well, we don't have CA in Halifax. And he was like, well, why don't you just start one? And I was like, well, I'm gonna fucking start one then. And so I did. And so CA came to Halifax. They did have it in the 80s at one point, I think, right, Percy? Yeah, so they had it in the 80s at one point, but there was no CA in Halifax when I got sober. So me and Patrick and Alex, we started a CA meeting. We're just like, yeah, we're gonna do it. And I showed up there. Nobody else showed up. Like, it took months for anybody other than the three of us to show up. We had to start going like to poach people from AA to get them to come. But they did. And it grew so much. It, like, you know, they talk about like the fledgling society or whatever, and it's like how it was like multiplying. Like, we're all, like, everybody there is able to sponsor, right? So like anybody who comes in the door, like everyone can raise their hand, like, we will sponsor you. Like, we will do this. Like, we are so excited. Like, we just, I couldn't believe that you could have this type of recovery. Like, I literally was, you know, I would hear from people like, oh, you're just on a pink cloud. Cute. Like, I'm not on a pink cloud. You don't understand. Like, I was on death's door. I shouldn't even be here. Like, I should be dead. I was ready to shoot myself in the head. Had I had a gun, I probably would have done it. You don't understand. Like, I can't believe that I get to be alive and have happiness that doesn't come from a chemical and like real true joy and happiness. And I was just, you know, I'm high on life. And so, you know, I've made amends to my dad. And, you know, through writing out that amends, which is how my sponsor showed me how to do it, you know, I was praying. I'm like, how am I ever going to make up for all the hurt that I did to my dad? Like, can you imagine trying to raise your two daughters after your wife dies of, like, terrible cancer, and you're, like, 32, and you're left with these little kids? Like, what the fuck? Like, I can't even imagine. Like, I think about that now and what my dad must have went through, and then, like, me turning into, like, an absolute, like, TV special fucking drug addict. And so, like, I'm praying, I'm asking God, like, how can I ever, like, make this up to him, right? And so I'm writing it out, and I literally am having a spiritual experience, because what's coming onto my paper from my pen is, it's nothing that I could have come up with on my own power. It is absolutely from God. And I'm writing this stuff down, and I'm like, oh, shit, like, I can't even, like, I'm having a spiritual experience reading what I'm writing. And so I go to my dad and I read him this letter, you know, and really the gist of it was that I was taking responsibility. You know, I blamed him, you know, for raising me this way and, you know, getting married, blah, 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 blah. I had all these reasons, right? I was such a victim. I blamed him for all the bad things that went wrong in my life. And, you know, I finally just took responsibility. I was like, it wasn't your fault. And, you know, I said to him, you know, many other things, but I just remember at the end of it, he physically looked different. It was like a weight that was like a soul-crushing weight on him that had been there for so long, like God had just taken it away. And, you know, that was an incredible experience for us. And so, like, I'm having hockey nights with my dad. We're big Habs fans. It's funny because my boyfriend, also my husband now, Patrick, he was a Bruins fan. So, like, my dad wasn't sure about him at first. He was like, you're dating a Bruins fan? I'm like, Dad, he's a good guy. Like, I swear. And so my dad had him over. And just, like, he's like a... Patrick is one of the people that can build a house. He doesn't even know how to do it. He just, like, it was born ingrained into him. He just built a fucking house. And so my dad was like, I really need someone to, like, come look at the basement. Anyways, the two of them rebuilt the basement one summer. And, like, they're best friends. And so, like, I'm looking at my life, okay? And I'm like, it cannot get any better. Like, I'm a couple years sober at this point. With all these sponsees, people around me are sober, we're living the good life. You know, my dad and my stepmom have been trying to get pregnant for like 10 years at this point, and she gets pregnant. Like, my dad had two vasectomies and had them reversed, and she's pregnant. Like, it's a fucking miracle. That's my dad. I'm like, is it yours? Like, you know, maybe she got a sperm donor or something, right? Whatever, like, I would have been, you know, whatever, do what you gotta do, right? Anyways, so I'm telling, like, everybody in my life, like, you gotta get sober, your life is gonna be so good, like, everything is just so much better when you're sober, right? You know, my sponsor told me, like, you know, you have to stay spiritually fit, Jessica, because there's gonna be trials and low spots ahead. I'm like, like, later maybe, like, not now, like, everything's good. So, you know, we're having, like, a baby shower for my stepmom, and, you know, my dad has this weird thing going on. Like, he's got something going on in his throat. One time I called him at work, and it just didn't sound like he was drunk. Anyways, he quickly deteriorated and got diagnosed with ALS, and my sister was born and he died 6 months later. And, you know, that was such a hard time for us. You know, I love my dad so much, and I had only gotten, like, a few years, like, of sobriety with him, and, you know, I had asked him, you know, before he died, I was like, you know, what are you most worried about? And he said, you know, I'm worried about Ava, like, my little, the baby. He's like, I'm worried about Ava, you know, she's gotta grow up, you know, I'm not gonna be there, like, you know, I can't support her, and blah, 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 and I'm, in my back of my mind, I was like, you're not worried about me? Like, just a little bit of selfishness sneaking through, right? But afterwards, I got home and I was telling Patrick about it, and it dawned on me. I was like, holy fuck. he's not worried about me. And so, you know, as he's, you know, dying, like, we're in the hospital, you know, it's his last day, and, like, we kind of know, like, he's been deteriorating, and, you know, our pastor's there, and my mom's there, and I'm, like, going and getting them coffee, and I'm, like, holding my mom's, like, my stepmom's hand, and my, like, other sister's there, and the baby, and all of our family. We've got his, like, favorite Irish music on, and, you know, I just realized in that moment, like, I am so helpful to my family right now. I am not taking anything from them. I am giving. Like, I have never been giving of anything in my entire life. And here I am, able to give back to my family in the worst time of my life, too. Like, this is the worst time of my life, too. But I am not making it worse for them. I'm making it better. And I thought, man, it's like, this is a horrible time, but at the same time, I saw God showing up again in my life in the most terrible point of my life. And so, you know, after he passed, like, you know, I had to write a lot of inventory on that because I was mad. I was like, he just didn't get enough time. Like, I took so much of his emotional security away. Like, he just didn't get to live the life that, you know, and I just couldn't understand, you know, why a loving God would take away, you know, my mom and then my dad. Like, I was just, oh, you know. And then I just got to the point where, you know, I wrote enough about it, and I talked to my sponsor, and I was, you know, surrounded by people in the fellowship enough that they were just like, you know, this is life. The trials and low spots are going to keep coming. We don't know what's going to keep happening to us. Like, and it just made me realize, like, I don't know how much time I have with people. So now it just kind of ignited in me, like, well, I need to make these relationships count. Like, I don't know how much time I have. Like, you don't know how much time you have to make amends with people. You don't know how much time you have to be sober and love on these people. They could be gone so quickly. And so I made it my mission to bring joy to the lives of all of the people that knew me. And so I just wanted to, you know, form stronger relationships, get stronger bonds, you know, like, kind of go to people who, you know, that I maybe didn't talk to in my family, and just try to just rekindle all these relationships that I had, you know, made amends for, but not really ever rebonded with them. And so, you know, I started going to visit people and making all these trips to see people, and it was just a beautiful time in my life. And I owe that to recovery, I owe that to the program. And so, you know, Patrick and I were going to get married. We got engaged before my dad died, which was really beautiful. So we're getting married. He left us some money. The wedding was completely paid for by my dad, which was a huge blessing. And, you know, I get to walk down the aisle to, you know, someone who's in recovery, and we've just built this incredible life. You know, there's tons of people in recovery at our wedding. You know, like, it was a party to celebrate, you know, the miracle of our, you know, just our whole group of people and our family, and just, like, what recovery can do in the lives of your life and all the people that my alcoholic addict tornado literally destroyed. And it was incredible. And so we went to BC after that. I had just finished my undergrad. Yeah, I know, I went to university, crazy, right? They let me in. I told them I used to be a drug addict and I wanted to register as a mature student, and I, like, didn't have enough, like, credits from high school, but they let me in anyway. Crazy. And I got a degree. It took a long time, took a little bit extra. And then I got a full ride to go do my master's at UBC. Like, this is crazy. And so we're out in BC, but I have to leave my CA Halifax family behind. And I'm like, is it going to survive without me? I don't think so. Like, I've been opening the door there for years. Like, is it going to crumble when I'm gone? No, it got even better. it was like a proud mom moment for me. And so we're out in BC, and we're like, you know, we're going to start trying to have a baby. I'm doing my master's, and, you know, it's like, we're done, we're wed, you know, we're married, and we're old enough, and time's ticking by, and it's like, okay, it's time. So, it's just like the next step in our relationship or whatever. And so, so we get pregnant when we were in BC, you know, and we tell everyone we're so excited, you know, but then we had a miscarriage, and I was like, oh, that's, whatever, like they're trying to science it away. They're just like, oh, you know, some embryos just don't make it. I'm like, okay, like, you know, I'm a scientist, so like I understand that, you know. I used to joke that I was a geologist because I loved The Rock. But I actually am a scientist. Like, that's my undergrad and my master's. I do have a master's of science. It's great. And so I'm like, okay, that's fine. Like, we're just going to keep trying, obviously. Like, what's more fun than having sex, right? And so we keep trying and keep trying. And we get pregnant again, and then we lose that baby. And then we get pregnant again, and then we lose that baby. By this time, we're in Alberta, and I'm like, this is crazy. Like, we're 3 for 3 in losses now. It's really starting to like affect us. I'm like pissed off at God again. I'm like, man, like this shouldn't be so hard. Like, you know, we've been through so much. Like, I've already lost so much, and so you know, we're going to a fertility doctor and we're trying to look at what's wrong and why is this happening. And I'm like, it's because I smoke too much crack and you fucking smoke too much crack. And like, now I'm angry at us and I'm angry at our bodies and I'm like, why do we do this? And like, but then I just remember, I'm like, everything in God's timing. You know, what the book says, baby or no baby, you know, job or no job. You know, we simply do not, you know, stay recovered as long as we're dependent upon those things. Like, that's not, I can still have good recovery whether or not I have my family, a baby, lots of money, whatever. Like, the book says that I don't need anything external to be internally well. And so I really took that to heart. I was like, okay, I need to have peace with this and I really need to accept it. And so we did all the tests, nothing's wrong with us apparently, but still in my heart, I'm like, I don't know, like, I don't know if this is ever even gonna happen for us. I remember going and speaking somewhere and, you know, and I just suffered this loss and, you know, I'm like, I'm trying to, you know, tell people like that recovery is amazing, but I'm up there crying, you know? I'm like, yeah, I just suffered a lot of loss lately. You know, I lost my dad and I'm losing all these babies and, you know, but I could still joke and smile because I still had this peace inside. Even though I was still a little bit upset, I knew that, you know, no matter what, I've still got my recovery and, you know, I've got a beautiful life. And that's how I had to look at it. And so we decided to go to California and have this big vacation. You know, and so we're planning for that. Like, we're going to go next year, okay? So this vacation is getting planned. But in the meantime, we're planning this vacation, I get pregnant. I'm like, oh my God, this is amazing, okay? So like, I'm like, we're gonna like have a baby by the time we go on this vacation, right? So I finally make it past like this 3-month window, okay? Like, this is like the magical window for anybody who knows about like trying to, you know, conceive or whatever. You make it past this 3-month window and like, we're finally like, okay, like we can tell people now. And so, like, you know, I've got this little tiny, like, bum, which is really just looks like I ate too many chicken wings. But I'm so excited. I'm like, you know, I'm like, we're finally like, okay, like, let's go to the baby store and, like, buy stuff, you know? And, you know, we went to our, like, 20-week ultrasound, and they told us that our baby boy had, like, life-altering conditions. There was no way that he was going to survive. And he was stillborn. You know, I held him. It's so funny because at that moment, I was just so happy to have a baby in my arms. Even though he was already gone. You know, he just looked so much like Patrick. It was such a weird feeling to be so happy and so sad at the same time. Because he was so perfect. You know, we took pictures with them and I got to dress them and put this cute little hat on them. And we called him Freddie after my dad. And you know, I didn't think we would ever get over that. I didn't think it was possible. I thought for sure this will be what puts somebody out, you know. Because not only am I experiencing this loss, but I'm also like hormonally destroyed. And so, you know, after you have a baby, your body decides that it's going to try to feed the baby. And so, like, I don't have a baby. And I've come home with empty arms. And, like, my body does not realize that I have empty arms. And it thinks I have a baby. So, like, I have milk. And, like, the only way to get rid of it is to take it out. And so I had this moment in my mind. I was like, I felt like God told me, well, it can help another baby. And so I just started pumping all this milk. And I got, like, an entire cooler full of it for this. There's this program at the hospital for the NICU babies. And I was like, that is what kept me going, because I had to pump all the time to do it. And I wasn't going to work or anything. So I had this entire stash of frozen milk. And I remember bringing it to the hospital to give it to these little sick NICU babies. And I was just like, I needed to have a purpose at that time. And that just kept me going, because it's like round the clock. Like, I have to wake up in the middle of the night. And I was like, nope, I'm doing it for these other babies. These other babies whose moms can't produce for them, and they need this, and that's what I'm doing. And so God gave me that little purpose in that time. You know, and I was obviously surrounded by people in CA, people making us food, people calling, people coming, and, you know, doing incredible stuff for Patrick and I, and just really just being there for us. And listening to us cry, and, you know, taking the crib out, and, you know, just getting out all the baby stuff out of our house for us, and, you know, we got through that. You know, I tell people all the time, like, really hard shit is going to happen, in recovery. It will. Like, it will. I hope nothing does. Like, I really just wish for everybody that you have incredible, amazing lives, so that nothing bad would happen. And in fact, I pray for it all the time. But just in case it does, know that, like, God will, and this program will, and this fellowship will be there for you and get you through it, and you will come out on the other side. It will not look like you imagined, but eventually you will be okay. And I still even felt after that if I did not have a baby, that I would be okay. And that God just had a different plan for my life, and I became at peace with that. And so we still had this vacation planned to California, so I'm like, well, we're freaking going. And so we went to California, and I just started this medication so we're gonna start IVF, because if we can pick, it's a long story, but if you can pick the egg, the special embryo, like without any problems, and implant that one, you're lessening your chances of issues. And so we're gonna do that. But we go to California and we have a great time. And I'm thinking, like, I don't want to get pregnant in March because I don't want to have a freaking Christmas baby. And so I'm like, we're definitely not. Like, this is a perfect time to go on vacation. We're just going to have fun. And did we ever. Anyway, so we went to a meeting down there. And there's, like, a bonfire meeting. Like, can you imagine having your meeting outside all the time because it's sunny all the time? California, they're living it up. CA is living it up in California. And so, like, we're at this meeting. It's amazing. It's called a bonfire meeting. They're like, the sun is setting. It's the most majestic thing I've ever seen. The recovery is incredible. And I'm just like, this is exactly what we needed. And I just felt really, just really reconnected to God and to, like, to Patrick and just to, like, CA as a whole. And I just thought, this is an incredible vacation. And, like, I was throwing up on the plane on the way home, and he was like, you must eat gluten, like, anyways, we had a miracle, and, I got pregnant, like, so randomly, and obviously we were terrified. I'm terrified that this baby's not gonna make it, that, you know, and it's another boy, and I'm like, oh, maybe boys are the problem, maybe my body rejects them or eats them or something. So, anyways, John Frederick Kearns was born December 21st, a freaking Christmas baby. And he is the light of my life. And, you know, now when he's torturing me and, like, driving me crazy, I'm like, you fucking prayed for this! And we just love him, you know? He's six now, and he just started grade one. And I was telling a few people this morning, he's with my stepmom.
this weekend, and she picked him up on Friday, and he puked the whole way home. I was like, oh, better you than me. So, like, I have an incredible relationship with my family today. You know, I have great recovery in CA. You know, I'm living a life I could have never dreamed of. You know, I do nightly inventory. I do meditation. I sponsor people. I make things right when I do wrong. I laugh. I always tell people this morning, like, if I give someone the finger in traffic, I pray for them after, you know. And, you know, I just really practice these principles in all my affairs the best that I know how. Because I know that I did so much harm in my life that now I want to make sure I stay spiritually fit enough to continue to do good. I don't want to hurt people anymore. I don't want to make amends. I don't want people to die without me, you know, making things right. I don't want to ever have that regret. And I just want to live happy, joyous, and free. You know, I have a purpose today. I'm trudging the road to happy destiny. Do you guys know what trudge means? Walk with purpose. Yeah, it doesn't mean like slop along like angrily. Like, I'm walking with purpose in this program today. I'm carrying the message. Every woman that I take through the steps, I am praying so hard that they're going to make it. You know, obviously it's not my power that can do it, and I know that, but, you know, I was powerless, and I tell them that, and I say that you have a chance too. Like, you don't have to keep going like this. Like, your life does not have to suck the life out of you. You don't have to be a victim forever. Like, this, you don't have to just be, you know, life just coming at you all the time. Like, you can thrive, even in the worst of times in your life. You can get through it. You know, God has continually shown up in my life in many different ways. I've had so many spiritual experiences. I could take another freaking hour to tell you about all of them. You know, I came into recovery, and it was like a science experiment to me. You know, this hypothesis was that maybe that, you know, this 12-step program could help me, and I was just going to wing it. I was just going to try it, you know. But, you know, the theory that it was going to work was proven to be true, you know. And I stand here today before you, sober, clean, and, you know, like I said, happy, joyous, and free. And I get to pass this on, and I always like to read this at the end of my shares on page 100. It's my favorite little part in the book. And it says, when we look back, we realize that the things which came to us when we put ourselves in God's hands were better than anything we could have planned. That is my experience, okay? I put my life in God's hands, and it is better than anything I could have planned. If I follow the dictates of a higher power, you will presently live in a new and wonderful world no matter what your present circumstances. It doesn't matter what's going on out there. I can be okay inside. Whatever's going on in the world, you know what I mean? I'm like, just tune me out. I don't want to know. Like, I can be okay. You know, the grouch and the brainstorm, that's not for me. I don't need to know. Like, I'm just going to focus on my recovery, my life, and making sure that the people around me, you know, get a chance to have this. You know, just, it's the best thing that ever could happen to me. And I just pray that every one of you gets a chance to experience, you know, the joy of recovery. So thank you guys for having me tonight. I really appreciate being asked to speak here. I have loved my time here this weekend. So thank you so much.